35. First into the sky. You think yourself so clever, but my eyes are not those of some petty noble to be clouded by a false nose and some dirt on the cheeks. Someone bumped Sigzil's cot, waking him from a dream. He yawned, and Rock's breakfast bell began ringing in the next room. He'd been dreaming in Azish. He'd been back home studying for the governmental service tests. Passing would have qualified him to enter a real school with a shot at becoming a clerk to someone important. Only in the dream, he'd been panicked to realize he'd forgotten how to read. After so many years away, thinking of his mother tongue felt strange. He yawned again, settling on his cot, back to the stone wall. They had three small barracks and a common room in the center. Out there, everyone pushed, ramble-scramble, up to the breakfast table. Rock had to shout at them, yet again, to organize themselves. Months in Bridge 4, now apprentice Knights Radiant, and a lot of them still couldn't figure out how to line up properly. They wouldn't last a day in Azir, where queuing in an orderly way wasn't only expected, it was practically a mark of national pride. Sigzil rested his head against the wall, remembering. He'd been the first from his family in generations with a real shot at passing the exams. A silly dream. Everyone in Azir talked about how even the humblest man could become prime, but the son of a laborer had so little time to study. He shook his head, then washed with a basin of water he'd fetched the night before. He took a comb to his hair and inspected himself in a polished length of steel. His hair was growing far too long. The tight black curls had a tendency to stick straight out. He set out a sphere to use its light for a shave. He had acquired his own razor. Soon after he started, however, he nicked himself. He sucked in a breath at the pain, and his sphere winked out. What? His skin started glowing, letting off a faint luminescent smoke. Oh, right. Kaladin was back. Well, that was going to solve so many problems. He got out another sphere and did his best not to eat this one as he finished shaving. Afterward, he pressed his hand against his forehead. Once, he'd had slave brands there. The stormlight had healed those, though his Bridge 4 tattoo remained. He rose and put on his uniform. Colin blue, sharp and neat. He slid his new hogshide notebook into his pocket, then stepped out into the common room, and stopped short as Lopin's face swung down right in front of him. Sigzil almost slammed into the Herdazian, who was stuck by the bottoms of his feet to the storming ceiling. "Hey," Lopin said, bowl of morning porridge held upside down, or, well, right side up, but upside down to Lopin, in front of him. The Herdazian tried to take a bite, but the porridge slipped off his spoon and splatted to the ground.
"Lopin, what are you doing?"
"Practicing. I've got to show them how good I am, Hooch. It's like with women, only it involves sticking yourself to the ceiling and learning not to spill food on the heads of people you like."
"Move, Lopin."
"Ah, you have to ask the right way. I'm not one-armed anymore. I can't be shoved around. Say, do you know how to get two armed Herdazians to do what you want?"
"If I did, we wouldn't be having this conversation."
"Well, you take away both of their spears, obviously." He grinned.
A few feet away, Rock laughed with a loud,
"Huh."
Lopin wiggled his fingers at Sigzil, as if to taunt him, fingernails glistening. Like all Herdazians, he had fingernails that were dark brown and hard as crystal, a bit reminiscent of carapace. He still had a tattoo on his head, too. Though so far only a few of Bridge 4 had learned to draw in Stormlight, each of those had kept their tattoos. Only Kaladin was different. His tattoo had melted off once he took in Stormlight, and his scars refused to heal.
"Remember that one for me, Hooch?" Lopin said.
He never would explain what Hooch meant, or why he used it only to refer to Sigzil.
"I'll need sure lots and lots of new jokes. Also sleeves. Twice as many of those, except on vests. then the same number.
How did you even manage to get up there, so you could stick your feet?
No, don't start. I don't actually want to know.
Sigzel ducked under Lopin. The men were still scrambling for food, laughing and shouting in complete disarray. Sigzel shouted to get their attention.
Don't forget! The captain wanted us up and ready for inspection by second bell.
Sigzel could barely be heard. Where was Teft? They actually listened when he gave orders. Sigzel shook his head, weaving his way toward the door. Among his people, he was of average height. But he'd gone and moved among the Alethi, who were practically giants. So here, he was a few inches shorter than most. He slipped out into the hallway. The bridge crews occupied a sequence of large barracks on the tower's first floor. Bridge 4 were gaining radiant powers, but there were hundreds more men in the battalion who were still ordinary infantry. Perhaps Teft had gone to inspect the other crews. He'd been given responsibility for training them. Hopefully it wasn't the other thing. Kaladin bunked in his own small suite of rooms at the end of the hallway. Sigzel made his way there, going over his scribbles in the notebook. He used Alethi glyphs, as was acceptable for a man out here, and had never learned their actual writing system. Storms, he'd been away so long, the dream was probably right. He might have trouble writing in the Azish script. What would life be like if he hadn't turned into a failure and a disappointment? If he'd passed the tests instead of getting into trouble, needing to be rescued by the man who had become his master? The list of problems first, he decided, reaching Kaladin's door and knocking.
Come,
the captain's voice said from inside. Sigzel found Kaladin doing morning push-ups on the stone floor. His blue jacket was draped over a chair.
Sir,
Sigzel said.
Hey, Sig,
Kaladin said, grunting as he continued his push-ups.
Are the men up and mustered?
Up, yes, Sigzel said. When I left them, they seemed bordering on a food fight, and only half were in uniform.
They'll be ready, Kaladin said. Was there something you wanted, Sig?
Sigzel settled down in the chair next to Kaladin's coat and opened his notebook.
A lot of things, sir. Not the least of which is the fact that you should have a real scribe, not whatever I am.
You're my clerk.
A poor one. We have a full battalion of fighting men with only 3 lieutenants and no official scribes. Frankly, sir, the bridge crews are a mess. Our finances are in shambles, requisition orders are piling up faster than Leighton can deal with them, and there's an entire host of problems requiring an officer's attention.
Kaladin grunted.
The fun part of running an army.
Exactly.
That was sarcasm, Sig. Kaladin stood up and wiped his brow with a towel.
All right, go ahead.
We'll start with something easy, Sigzel said. Pete is now officially betrothed to the woman he's been seeing.
Ka? That's wonderful.
Maybe she could help you with scribe duties.
Perhaps. I believe that you were looking into requisitioning housing for men with families?
Yeah, that was before the whole mess with the Weeping and the expedition onto the Shattered Plains, and I should go back to Dalinar's scribes about it, shouldn't I?
Unless you expect the married couples to share a bunk in the standard barracks, then I'd say that yes, you should.
Sigzel looked to the next page in his book.
I believe Bissig is close to being betrothed as well.
Really? He's so quiet. I never know what's going on behind those eyes of his.
Not to mention Punio, who I found out recently is already married. His wife drops off food for him.
I thought that was his sister.
He wanted to fit in, I believe, Sigzel said. His broken Alethi already makes that hard. And then there's the matter of Drehi.
What matter?
Well, he's been courting a man, you see.
Kaladin threw on his coat, chuckling.
I did know about that one. You only now noticed?
Sigzel nodded.
It's Drew he's been seeing still, from the district quartermaster's offices?
Yes, sir.
Sigzel looked down.
Sir, Well, it's just that...
Yes?
Sir, Drehi hasn't filled out the proper forms, Sigzel said. If he wants to court another man, he needs to apply for social reassignment, right?
Kaladin rolled his eyes. So, there were no forms for that in Alethkar. Sigsel couldn't say he was surprised, as the Alethi didn't have proper procedures for anything.
Then how do you apply for social reassignment?
We don't, Kaladin frowned.
Is this really that big a problem to you, Sig?
Maybe, sir. It's not this specifically. Right now there are four religions represented in Bridge 4.
Four?
Hubber follows the passions, sir. Four, even if you don't count Teft, who I can't figure out rightly. And now there's all this talk of Bright Lord Dalinar claiming the Almighty is dead, and... Well, I feel responsible, sir.
For Dalinar? Kaladin frowned.
No, no.
He took a deep breath. There had to be a way to explain this. What would his master do?
And now,
Sigsel said, scrambling at an idea,
everybody knows that Mishim, the third moon, is the most clever and wily of the moons.
All right. And this is relevant. Why?
Because of a story, Sigsel said. Hush. Please listen, sir. You see, there are three moons, and the third moon is the cleverest. And she doesn't want to be in the sky, sir. She wants to escape. So one night, she tricked the queen of the Natan people. This was a long time ago, so they were still around. I mean, they're still around now, but they were more around then, sir. And the moon tricked her. And then they traded places until they stopped. And now the Natan people have blue skin. Does that make sense?
Kaladin blinked. I have no idea what you just said.
Well, Sigsel said, it's obviously fanciful. Not the real reason that the Natan people have blue skin, and,
it was supposed to explain something?
It's how my master always did things, Sigsel said, looking at his feet. He'd tell a story any time someone was confused, or when people were angry at him. And, well, it changed everything, somehow.
He looked to Kaladin. I suppose, Kaladin said slowly, that maybe you feel like a moon?
No, not really.
It was about responsibility, but he had really not explained it well. Storms. Master Hoyt had named him a full world singer, and here he couldn't even tell a story straight. Kaladin clapped him on the shoulder.
It's all right, Sig.
Sir, Sigsel said. The other men don't have any direction. You've given them purpose, a reason to be good men. They are good men. But in some ways it was easy when we were slaves. What do we do if not all the men manifest the ability to draw in Stormlight? What is our place in the army? Bright Lord Colin released us from guard duty as he said he wanted us practicing and training as Radiants instead. But what is a Knight Radiant?
We'll need to figure it out.
And if the men need guidance? If they need a moral center? Someone has to talk to them when they're doing something wrong. But the Ardents ignore us, since they associate us with the things Bright Lord Dalinar is saying and doing.
You think you can be the one to guide the men instead? Kaladin asked.
Someone should, sir.
Kaladin waved for Sigsel to follow him out into the corridor. Together they started walking toward the Bridge 4 barracks, Sigsel holding out a sphere for light.
I don't mind if you want to be something like our unit's Ardent, Kaladin said. The men like you, Sig, and they put a lot of stock in what you have to say. But you should try to understand what they want out of life, and respect that, rather than projecting onto them what you think they should want out of life.
But, sir, some things are just wrong. You know what Teft has gotten into. And Huio, he's been visiting the prostitutes.
That's not forbidden. Storms, I've had some sergeants who suggested it as the key to a healthy mind in battle.
It's wrong, sir. It's imitating an oath without the commitment. Every major religion agrees to this except the Reshi, I suppose. But they're pagans even among pagans.
Your master teach you to be this judgmental? Sigsel stopped short.
I'm sorry, Sig, Kaladin said. No, he said the same thing about me. All the time, sir.
I give you permission to sit down with Huio and explain your worries, Kaladin said.
I won't forbid you from expressing your morals. I'd encourage it. Just don't present your beliefs as our code. Present them as yours, and make a good argument. Maybe the men will listen. Sigzil nodded, hurrying to catch up. To cover his embarrassment, more at completely failing to tell the right story than anything else, he dug into his notebook.
That does raise another issue, sir. Bridge 4 is down to 28 members after our losses during the first Everstorm. Might be time for some recruitment.
Recruitment? Kaladin said. He cocked his head.
Well, if we lose any more members,
we won't, Kaladin said. He always thought that.
Or even if we don't, we're down from the 35 or 40 of a good bridge crew. Maybe we don't need to keep that number, but a good active unit should always be watching for people to recruit. What if someone else in the army has been displaying the right attitude to be a windrunner? Or, more pointedly, what if our men start swearing oaths and bonding their own spren? Would we dissolve Bridge 4 and let each man be their own Radiant?
The idea of dissolving Bridge 4 seemed to pain Kaladin almost as much as the idea of losing men in battle. They walked in silence for a short time. They weren't going to the Bridge 4 barracks after all. Kaladin had taken a turn deeper into the tower. They passed a water wagon pulled by laborers to deliver water from the wells to the officers' quarters. Normally, that would be parchment work.
We should at least put out a call for recruitment, Kaladin finally said. Though honestly, I can't think of how I'll cull hopefuls down to a manageable number.
I'll try to come up with some strategies, sir, Sigzil said. If I might ask, where are we?
He trailed off as he saw Lynn hurrying down the hallway toward them. She carried a diamond chip in her palm for light and wore her Colin uniform, her dark Alethi hair pulled back in a tail. She drew up when she saw Kaladin, then saluted him smartly.
Just the man I was looking for. Quartermaster Vevidar sends word that your unusual request has been fulfilled, sir.
Excellent, Kaladin said, marching through the hallway past her. Sigzil shot her a look as she fell in with him, and she shrugged. She didn't know what the unusual request was, only that it had been fulfilled. Kaladin eyed Lynn as they walked.
You're the one who has been helping my men, right?
Lynn, was it?
Yes, sir.
In fact, it seems you've been making excuses to run messages to Bridge 4.
Yes, sir.
Not afraid of the lost Radiance, then?
Frankly, sir, after what I saw on the battlefield, I'd rather be on your side than bet on the opposition.
Kaladin nodded, thoughtful as he walked. Lynn, he finally said, how would you like to join the Windrunners? The woman stopped in place, jaw dropping.
Sir?
She saluted.
Sir, I'd love that. Storms!
Excellent, Kaladin said.
Sig, can you get her our ledgers and accounts?
Lynn's hand drooped from her brow.
Ledgers? Accounts?
The men will also need letters written to family members, Kaladin said. And we should probably write a history of Bridge 4. People will be curious, and a written account will save me from having to explain it all the time.
Oh, Lynn said. A scribe.
Of course, Kaladin said, turning back toward her in the hallway, frowning. You're a woman, aren't you?
I thought you were asking... I mean, in the High Prince's visions, there were women who were Knights Radiant, and with Brightness Shallan...
She blushed.
Sir, I didn't join the scouts because I liked sitting around staring at ledgers. If that's what you're offering, I'll have to pass.
Her shoulders fell and she wouldn't meet Kaladin's eyes. Sigzil found strangely that he wanted to punch his captain. Not hard, mind you, just a gentle wake-up punch. He couldn't remember feeling that way with Kaladin since the time the captain had woken him up that first morning back in Satius's war camp.
I see, Kaladin said.
Well, we're going to have tryouts to join the Order proper. I suppose I could extend you an invitation, if you'd like.
Tryouts, she said. For real positions? Not just doing accounts? Storms, I'm in.
Speak with your superior, then, Kaladin said. I haven't devised the proper test yet, and you'd need to pass it before you could be let in. Either way, you'd need clearance to change battalions.
Yes, sir, she said, and bounded off.
Kaladin watched her go, then grunted softly. Sigzil, without even thinking about it, mumbled, Did your master teach you to be that insensitive? Kaladin eyed him.
I have a suggestion, sir, Sigzil continued. Try to understand what people want out of life and respect that, rather than projecting onto them what you think they should...
Shut it, Sig.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
They continued on their way, and Kaladin cleared his throat.
You don't have to be so formal with me, you know.
I know, sir. But you're a Light Eyes now, and a Shardbearer, and... Well, it feels right.
Kaladin stiffened, but didn't contradict him. In truth, Sigzil had always felt awkward trying to treat Kaladin like any other bridge man. Some of the others could do it, Teft and Rock, Lopin in his own strange way, but Sigzil felt more comfortable when the relationship was set out and clear, Captain and his clerk. Moash had been the closest to Kaladin, but he wasn't in Bridge 4 any longer. Kaladin hadn't said what Moash had done, only that he had removed himself from our fellowship. Kaladin got stiff and unresponsive whenever Moash's name was mentioned.
Anything else on that list of yours? Kaladin asked as they passed a guard patrol in the hallway.
He received crisp salutes. Sigzil looked through his notebook.
Accounts and the need for scribes, code of morals for the men, recruitment. Oh, we're still going to need to define our place in the army, now that we're no longer bodyguards.
We're still bodyguards, Kaladin said. We just protect anyone who needs it. We have bigger problems in that storm. It had come again, a third time, this event proving that it was even more regular than the high storms, right around every 9 days. Up high as they were, its passing was only a curiosity. But throughout the world, each new arrival strained already beleaguered cities.
I realize that, sir, Sigzil said, but we still have to worry about procedure. Here, let me ask this. Are we, as Knights Radiant, still an Alethi military organization?
No, Kaladin said. This war is bigger than Alethkar. We're for all mankind.
All right. Then what's our chain of command? Do we obey King Elokar? Are we still his subjects? And what Don or Non are we in society? You're a Shardbearer in Dalinar's court, aren't you? Who pays the wages of Bridge 4? What about the other bridge crews? If there is a squabble over Dalinar's lands in Alethkar, can he call you and Bridge 4 up to fight for him, like a normal liege-vassal relationship? If not, then can we still expect him to pay us?
Damnation, Kaladin breathed.
I'm sorry, sir, it...
No, they're good questions, Sig. I'm lucky to have you to ask them. He clasped Sigzil on the shoulder, stopping in the hallway just outside the quartermaster's offices. Sometimes I wonder if you're wasted in Bridge 4. You should have been a scholar.
Well, that wind blew past me years ago, sir.
He took a deep breath.
I failed the exams for government training in Aesir. I wasn't good enough.
Then the exams were stupid, Kaladin said, and Aesir lost out because they missed the chance to have you. Sigzil smiled.
I'm glad they did.
And, strangely, he felt it was true. A nameless weight he'd been carrying seemed to slide off his back.
Honestly, I feel like Lin. I don't want to be huddled over a ledger when Bridge 4 takes to the air. I want to be first into the sky.
I think you'll have to fight Lopin for that distinction, Kaladin said with a chuckle. Come on. He strode into the quartermaster's office, where a group of waiting guardsmen immediately made space for him. At the counter, a beefy soldier with rolled-up sleeves searched through boxes and crates, muttering to himself. A stout woman, presumably his wife, inspected requisition forms. She nudged the man and pointed at Kaladin.
Finally, the quartermaster said.
I'm tired of having these here, drawing everyone's eyes and making me sweat like a spy with too many spren.
He shuffled over to a pair of large black sacks in the corner that, best that Sigzel could tell, weren't drawing any eyes at all. The quartermaster hefted them and glanced at the scribe, who double-checked a few forms, then nodded, presenting them for Kaladin to stamp with his captain's seal. Paperwork done, the quartermaster handed a sack to Kaladin and another to Sigzel. They clinked when moved and were surprisingly heavy. Sigzel undid the ties and glanced into his. A flood of green light, powerful as sunlight, shone out over him. Emeralds. The large type, not in spheres, probably cut from the gem hearts of chasm fiends hunted on the shattered plains. In a moment, Sigzel realized that the guards filling the room weren't here to get something from the quartermaster. They were here to protect this wealth.
"That's the Royal Emerald Reserve," the quartermaster said. "Held for emergency grain. Renewed with light in the storm this morning. How you talk the High Prince into letting you take it is beyond me."
"We're only borrowing them," Kaladin said. "We'll have them back before evening arrives. They'll be warned, some will be done. We'll need to check them out tomorrow again. And the day after that."
"I could buy a princedom for that much," the quartermaster said with a grunt. "What in Kalek's name do you need them for?"
Sigzel, however, had already guessed. He grinned like a fool. "We're going to practice being radiant."